Is everybody happy? Had her fill of donuts. The meditation of feeling. That's where I stepped off into the realm of the hindrances from the section on feeling of the mindfulness of breathing, the tetrad on feeling. That's an apt theme of contemplation today. Is that and one of the reasons, of course, that I started on the hindrances is the those first two parts of the of this tetrad are contemplation of experiencing piti, rapture, and experiencing happiness, sukha. So breathing in, breathing out, and trying to use that theme of the bringing the hindrances into abeyance in order to bring up those feelings of rapture and happiness. Dealing with it and skillfully relinquishing the hindrances in order to cultivate those positive feelings and say rather than rapture and happiness through donut satiation. Has a limited time span on its effect. So that contemplation of feeling, and then also in terms of this tetrad, that attending to the citta sankhara, experiencing the citta sankhara and calming citta sankhara being the that which conditions the mind conditioner, the condition of the mind. I mean, it can be interpreted in both those ways. And the primary aspects of citta sankhara, that which is your base, your fundamental condition for moving the mind, are feeling and perception. So that as we practice and contemplate, and having settled the mind through bringing the dealing skillfully with the hindrances, then to direct attention to the arising and movement within the mind. What is it that moves the mind? This feeling, and on a certain level, it's essential to be able to recognize that tendency, that dynamic, in order to understand the hindrances, because that's the mind immediately go it experiences something pleasant and almost invariably will go to the object of sensuality. Experiences something unpleasant, and it'll go to something negative, or aversion or confusion. So that to that investigation of the feeling, perception, and to really be contemplating that in the in each as the breath comes in, as the breath goes out, to really attend to the experience of the of feeling as something pleasant, and then what is its result, what's its association. Because perception is both sort of memory, association, it's that ability to immediately trying to find meaning in a particular experience. So what is its meaning to one, that we experience something either pleasant or unpleasant, and what importance, what meaning do we read into it immediately, what's the immediate impression? And then to be able to question that and recognize, well, this is just a perception. And then to be looking, is it valid or is it not valid? or is it, or on a certain level, of course, it's valid because it's arising, but is it useful or is it not useful? Is it going to be beneficial or not? Is it going to lead to suffering, or is it going to lead to the cessation of suffering? So as practitioners, then we need to be investigating this and attentive to that. And when we experience something that is unpleasant, does that necessarily, is it necessarily problematic? Can we use it as an opportunity to be patient? Can we, because that changes its quality, doesn't it? Or even when we experience a hindrance, in itself, it's negative. It's what is the Buddha points to as being that which undermines awareness and weakens wisdom. But as soon as we're able to establish awareness, and again, this is where it's very helpful, useful, necessary to there's mindfulness of breathing, anchoring, grounding the awareness in the and making it very familiar to yourself, so that you can keep returning to the breath. You're familiar. It's like a home ground for one. You can return to the breath, because as soon as you establish awareness of just that recognition, this is aversion. This is restlessness. That in itself is a positive mental state. It's like the way that the mind functions, then the map of the mind that's from a Buddhist perspective, and particularly in the Abhidhamma, that these mental states don't exist beside each other. They exist sequentially, so that there's you can't have a negative state of mind coexisting together with a positive state of mind. They can shift back and forth, and can shift back and forth very quickly. But as soon as you establish awareness and have that and intrinsically, the nature of mindfulness is that it is a positive mental state, then that mental state is one that is wholesome. And whether or not one can sustain it is another story. because it might just sort of be drawn back into the negativity. But they, let's say, the opportunity is one of, as soon as one establishes awareness, then that one has moved from, say, the unwholesome, unskillful, to the wholesome and skillful, and then the work is then to sustain that, and that's again where the mindfulness of breathing is so important, because the more familiar you become with it, the more skilled you are in taking that object and then its associations, its perception is one of skillfulness, peace, tranquility, clarity. Then the mind can be able to go back to that, and then it's able to extend its stability of the wholesome, of the peaceful, of the clear. So that the mindfulness of feeling, to be attending to how these feelings condition us, and feeling perception. And what comes to mind is a little vignette from Winnie the Pooh again, Winnie the Pooh is sitting under a tree, and he hears this buzzing noise, and then he thinks to himself, "What's this buzzing? This buzzing and buzzing sound?" And then it's, "Well, there's only one thing that can make a buzzing noise like this, and that's bees." And then, of course, the next sort of thought is, "Well, there's only one thing that bees do, and they make honey." And then he thinks again, "And there's only one thing that honey's good for, and it's for me to eat it." So then he gets up and he goes and climbs this tree looking for the honey. So it's this, these associations, and it's sort of, it's more or less, you know, how our own minds work. You hear something, and there's a feeling, an association, a perception, and then the thought arises associated with that, and then there's a feeling and perception associated with that, and you end up in various places, climbing trees, looking for honey. If I'm not mistaken, I think he got stuck or something in this particular adventure. To be investigating and tracking these mental states, the mind that arises, you know, how that's conditioned. How do the hindrances come about? There are all these sets of conditioning factors, so that setting the conditions for our practice, and that mindfulness of breathing, is a major conditioning factor for bringing into being the wholesome states of mind, peaceful states of mind, and bringing the hindrances into abeyance. And that so that attending to the mindfulness of breathing. You know, when we experience that which is maybe painful, a painful sensation, and it's important to be investigating that and seeing what are the results. It's the general sort of knee-jerk reaction is, something's pleasant, I want it, something's unpleasant, I don't want it, I can't stand it. And that's a sort of on a worldly level, that's mostly how we function. But for the Buddha, he's always looking at the conditioning factors and seeing things in a much broader perspective and recognizing that there's happiness or pleasant sukha, that which is pleasant, that is the condition leading to more happiness, and then there's happiness or pleasure that leads to suffering. There's sukha that leads to sukha, and there's sukha that leads to dukkha. And similarly, there's dukkha, there's the unpleasant that leads to more dukkha, and then there's the dukkha that leads to that which is pleasant, that which is the way out of dukkha. So that to be able to bring that into perspective and working with feeling, so that especially with that which is unpleasant, dukkha vedana, because of the unpleasant nature of it, we tend to, I think, it's disastrous, it's awful, how can I get rid of it? Somebody's to blame. We generate more negativity. But using the dukkha vedana as bringing mindfulness to bear, using the steadying of attention on the feeling, and then directing attention to that which is at least on the level of equanimity and stability, so that one's not shaken. That's where the Buddha talks of if one is experiencing, as if one were experiencing illness, then how can you let experience the bodily illness without experiencing mental illness, without making the mind ill at ease, making it feel, the body is already feeling pain and discomfort. Why go and make the mind feel pain and discomfort also? So that the same in meditation or in whatever experience we're engaged with, how can we attend to the feeling of, oh, this is unpleasant, and then learn to bring up those qualities which are wholesome, and equanimity is a wholesome factor, patience is a wholesome factor, effort is a wholesome factor. One doesn't have to try to sugarcoat it I'm experiencing dukkha vedana, I must be progressing, or this must be good for me. One doesn't have to sort of try to sugarcoat it and make it what it isn't. But it's sort of, well, how can I use this skillfully? So that using when one's experiencing painful sensation in meditation, and as we, we're in retreat and doing many hours of meditation a day, it's inevitable that we feel some discomfort in the body, some physical pain. How can that be used in a way that helps us to develop the meditation? Again, that mindfulness of breathing is so important, because it's the same sort of relaxing into the breath. And how do we, when we're experiencing physical pain, painful sensation in the back, in the knee, how do we stay with the breath in a way that doesn't sort of tighten up, tense up, start to fret and get restless, or start to get really averse to the feeling, and that being very present with the breath and just really relaxing the breath and recognizing, well, despite the fact that there is a painful sensation in the, say, in the knee or in the back, the breath is still here, and the breath is always a neutral object, or generally a neutral object. So that to just trying to relax everything around the breath, rather than the mind being grabbed and co-opted by that particular sensation. In the body, it's really taking the breath, each in breath, and really relaxing and settling into that breath. The pain can still be there, but it changes. One changes the relationship with it when one starts to take a more relaxed, neutral object of attention. The perception changes. It becomes not so strident, not so sort of shrill. Or if it is still shrill, sort of screaming out at one, then to actually to really surrounding that. With using the breath, it's really trying to relax the breath and permeating the body with the breath, and then surrounding that feeling, say in the knee, with that sort of easeful breath, the breath being very easeful, and very relaxed, and trying to permeate the body with that soft, gentle breath, and then surrounding that particular feeling with that. And again, the perception can change. When the perception changes, then the feeling can also change. It can start to be not so painful. It can turn to more neutral. It can be just sensation. Or it can be painful, but then it's not, again, when the perception isn't so sort of shrill and demanding, then it doesn't agitate the mind in the same way. So it's not concocting the mind in a negative way. So attending to the mind conditioners, it's conditioning the mind. As that which is pleasant, because sometimes we can, sometimes this if we feel something that is pleasant, we're sitting, especially sitting and watching the breath, can be very pleasant. And then the perception, the association, the memory. Is a lot of our pleasantness, when we think of relaxing, being at ease, and it's usually It's not really usually associated with energy and effort. When we feel really relaxed and at ease, it's really when we can not have to deal with things, not have to bother. We can just let things go. And that's, one has to question that. Is that actually useful in terms of Dhamma? Because of that kind of relaxing, letting things go, just being really, just letting it all be at ease. What usually happens is the mind starts to drift with that, doesn't it? It doesn't retain its sharpness, it doesn't retain its clarity. So that sometimes with pleasant sensation, there's a real need to be on one's guard, to be alert, to bring up ways of energizing the breath, energizing the body, energizing the object of attention, energizing the reflection, so that there's not that drifting taking place, because it's the feeling and perception then condition the mind, so that if the feeling is pleasant, the perception is one of sort of kicking back on a it's a real nice kind of comfortable chair on a porch on a nice sunny day in summer. Sort of a very easy book to read, sort of something cool to drink beside me, just sort of laying back. There's not really sharp meditation. there's that drifting taking place. So one needs to recognize that, and then that's attending to the breath, attending to the body, attending to the mind in a way that is going to energize and bring up the qualities of clarity. When we experience that which is neutral, and we talk about feeling, the feeling tone of things, and we, that there's always three feelings that the Buddha talks about: the pleasant, the unpleasant, and the neutral. And the neutral is probably what we have to be more alert to, more sensitive to, because it's a bit more predominant, especially in terms of meditation. A lot of what we experience is rather neutral, and also because the with neutral sensation, then we tend to start to fill things in. And again, that's where feeling, perception. There's a neutral feeling, and then the perception is one, we're almost scrambling sometimes to find a perception that's gonna fit. It's going to make sense to us, even though it doesn't necessarily have to, because it's just a neutral sensation anyway. But we're, the mind is always sort of, kind of working to at these perceptual level association. It's trying to make its associations. And that, when there's neutral feeling, then there's a, it's almost like a gap that's there that is then trying to be filled. And if we're not attentive to perception, if we're not attending to, what are the associations that are coming up? What is the on the perceptual level, what is actually happening, then we very easily get sort of, you know, co-opted by these. It's almost like, you know, say perception by default or association by default. I'm feeling neutral, so that's boring. And then from there, this neutral, nothing much is happening. So let's get something going here. Let's find something that's interesting to think about. Sensual desire, or this is nothing much is happening. I'm fed up with this. This is really irritating. Or, you know, going into dullness or restlessness. Doubt. Just because there's a neutral, it's neutral, and we can't. It's like abhorring a vacuum, not wanting to deal with that which is not defined clearly. It's not something. And then, you know, we will take a something that is negative and destructive, just because at least it's something, and not have the patience to just stay with the neutral feeling. And how does that neutral turn into something that is bright or is equanimous, in the sense of being very even, being very balanced. Because that's where that turning of that which is neutral into something that's very positive is needs that you know, staying with the neutral sensation, so that it can be grounded in, let's say, that equanimity of being very evenly balanced. Being very, having this quality of acceptance and clarity, and then it is able to then transform into an equanimity, and equanimity being a very, very, very positive mental state. I mean, that's, you think of factors of enlightenment, the seven factors of enlightenment, that's mindfulness, reflection on Dhamma, effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. Equanimity is your sort of culminating point in the factors of enlightenment. One works to that point, one builds on these different other positive qualities to come to a place of equanimity, so that that using and relying on the neutral sensation, which is then bringing mindfulness to that neutral feeling, bringing awareness and attention, making that neutral feeling come alive with alertness. Then that has a transformative quality, and then the perception then is one of bringing things into the heart, bringing things into the contemplation. Whereas with the neutrality, a neutral feeling, which is then not really attended to. Then, you know, one starts again looking outwards, looking at something else, or rejecting that, and then seeking something else. So that in our practice, this taking feeling and working with that, recognizing, well, what is the particular feeling that I'm experiencing? What is the tone of this sensation, how to work with it. What are the perceptions that come up? What's the associations? Because then that's from there the mind starts to spin out it can start spinning out into the hindrances, into the different forms of negativity. But then in the same way it's the same feeling and perception that is generating the reflections on Dhamma. You know, when we take something, a pleasant sensation, and then perceiving it as potential for something that can bring more well-being. And same with the dukkha vedana, this feeling of that which is unpleasant feeling. The perception and bringing up perception of its potential of Dhamma, of being something that I can really learn something from. I can really use this to cultivate some very wholesome qualities. All the qualities of Dhamma can be cultivated out of this particular feeling. So that the perception is one that is then assisting one in practice. And that's again the feeling perception are on a very basic level of the mind, and it happens very quickly. And one needs to recognize it, what perceptions are functioning, because we are completely conditioned by them, and you know it's important to be putting in place the positive associations and the reinforcing the potential for these positive associations in the mind, so that the perception keeps going to Dhamma. And then the same with the neutral. It's like the mind tends to be kind of flummoxed or just wanting to fill in the gaps all the time. So that with bringing up that intention to take the breath, which is a neutral sensation, take the breath, and to be really consistently returning awareness to the breath as the breath comes in, this quality of knowing and knowing clearly, as the breath goes out, establishing that quality of knowing clearly, and using the body as a foundation, using feeling as a foundation for this experiencing clearly the different aspects of content, and what is happening within the mind. It's really and returning to the, you know, and not just trying to figure it out on an intellectual level, but coming back to this as the breath comes in, say experiencing the mental, the citta sankhara, the mind conditioner. Breathing out, experiencing the mind conditioner. As one breathes in, experiencing, or calming the mind conditioner, the citta sankhara. As the breath goes out, calming the citta sankhara, that sense of calming, coming to a place of awareness, attentiveness, alertness, mindfulness. It's always that quality of mindfulness that is we need to be relying on, so that returning of mindfulness to the breath, making the breath the central piece of what our practice revolves around. And then we have this opportunity to investigate and apply attention in all these different ways, which are, you know, give us the lay the foundation for peacefulness, stability of mind, and lay the foundation for insight and penetration. To offer that for reflection this morning.